When did you first notice that you were becoming a birder?
I noticed when I was standing in a swamp waiting for someone to take pictures of wild orchids. And all these birds were flying about, and I decided I'd get a pair of binoculars and see what was going on. And that was back in 1968 or 1969, so I've been bird watching for a long time.
I'm counting it's 45 or more,
yeah, more than 45 years.
So this was a swamp in what, southern Indiana or?
Northern Indiana.
Northern Indiana.
Yeah.
They're
wild, little wild orchids. And also they have some of the carnivorous plants like sundews and things like that. So lady slippers, those were some of the orchids that we were taking pictures of.
And so what do you realize now were some of the birds that you were seeing that day?
I don't know what I was seeing then. But I remember birds from Indiana on a boat trip on a little canoe. We were working the weeds, and there was a least bittern. And it's got these lovely streaks on the throat, and it had its feet on two different reeds with the toes pointing outwards and his head pointing upwards and pretending that he wasn't there, and got a picture of it, and it was it's the only one I've ever seen in my life.
And happen to get a photograph of it.
Yeah. And so that's something you remember from decades ago.
And so in addition to the bittern, what were some of the early birds that you, or some of the first birds you developed an affection for?
Black Bernian warbler. That was another one that I saw in a metropolitan park in Cleveland, just passing through in the springtime. And it's got this golden color on the throat, and the evening sun was setting and shining on the throat. And so it was something you remember.
Now, a Black Bernian wouldn't be a warbler that we would get here.
No. They migrate in the eastern part of the U.S.
Yeah, I noticed not long after I took up birding and began to get somewhat competent of identifying a few things that I started rooting for some birds. Well, one of the things I learned, we all learn, is that some birds are indigenous and some are introduced, and I started rooting for birds like the evening grosbeak and the western meadowlark because of my emerging awareness of how they're threatened and how
their numbers are going down.
The numbers are going down, and how
habitats disappearing.
Birds from other places outcompete them.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if you had a similar reaction. Are there some birds in our neck of the woods that you root for, or you know, feel inspired when you see them?
One of my favorite birds is the chickadee, and it's not threatened in any way, shape, or form, but they've got a great deal of personality, and ounce for ounce, they're probably got more nerve than many of the larger birds, even the bald eagle, because they will take on just about anyone and anything.
And they're approachable. I think you were one of the first people to tell me that I could get a chickadee to eat out of my hand.
Yes.
If I had
patience
and sunflower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to find out for myself, and sure enough. And I probably had the same experience you did of noticing just the incredible personalities of these different birds as they looked you in the eye and trying to see whether you were really safe to approach or really meant well.
Right, yeah. So, I've got the chickadees eating out quite regularly. And this winter, several times I had pine siskins land on my hand to eat.
Siskins, too?
Yes. And the chickadees, we consider them polite because they take one seed, they go off and eat it, and then when they're done, they come back for another one. The pine siskin, on the other hand, sits there and gorges, sort of hoards the whole pile while he eats it, and somehow is able to manipulate the seed even with a tiny little bill and take the shell off and eat it. And so this one siskin ate at least three, if not four, seeds while he was sitting there. And if anyone approached, he'd spread his wings and open his mouth and threaten them within
the
inch.
threaten
them with an inch of their life.
Wow.
But finally I said, I think it's time for you to go now. And he perked up and flew off.
Well, one of the things I noticed about siskins is that we don't get them every year. They're not as regular, at least so where
right,
I was
right. They tend to be eruptive and depending on climate and food sources available.
Yeah.
They come or not.
I wanted to go over some of these wonderful pictures that you picked out. They're some of your favorites. And I've got them here on my iPad, so let me bring them up. And I'm just going to go down the list, and we'll be able to match these to on the website. And the first one you were telling me about is a moorhen.
Common moorhen. They're found in the United States. This particular photo was taken on a trip to Peru, and this was a marsh just south of Lima. And I love the cattails reflecting in the water, and the bird is grooming, and you can see the top of his red bill reflected as well.
Great picture. And in Peru, of course, it's just one of many places around the world where you've gone to.
Well, I've stayed in the Western Hemisphere pretty much for my bird watching. So Costa Rica, Peru, Belize.
Yeah. And I remember a story of yours, which I'll try to find, where you were in pursuit of these resplendent quetzal.
Yes.
And that was that in Belize?
That was in Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
So
yeah.
I saw resplendent quetzal in Costa Rica and saw a golden-headed quetzal in Peru. And that was interesting as well.
Well, I saw mallard today, so big guy.
Yeah.
And the next one down is one that even my kids would recognize. I'm sorry, kids, I didn't mean to not show you off like this, but that's a great blue heron.
Great blue heron. And I've had taken numerous pictures of the great blue heron around here, but typically I see them on a gray day and they aren't very resplendent, but this one is standing almost up to his belly in the water, and the sun is shining, causing the edges to glow, and I just really love
that. And that was taken
just right out here.
Right out. So we're doing the interview literally overlooking the Little Spokane River bend in it.
And then there are a couple smaller birds. The one has his wings flared, and they both have their mouths open.
And these are northern rough-winged swallows.
Correct, correct. And these are young birds. Their markings, I think, on the wings indicate they're young birds. It's taken in the fall. And my guess is that they are brother and sister arguing about who should be on the higher part of the branch.
Brother and sister, not husband and wife.
No, siblings.
Siblings.
Definitely siblings arguing about who should be sort of king of the mountain.
I trust you to spot a sibling rivalry. So.
Yes.
And then tell me where that was taken.
And that was taken off on one of the branches very close by the edge of the river.
We don't have to move
island.
Very far.
No,
those.
No.
And tell me about this bird. Is this their siskin?
No, this is our young song sparrow.
That's right.
And this again was taken in the fall. And I named her Miss Congeniality. There was another song sparrow that had white feathers sticking up on the crown, and I named her Miss Song Sparrow of 2012, and I saw this one at the same time, and she was Miss Congeniality.
Uh-huh.
And she's got her head turned to the side, looking very coy.
Seems pretty relaxed, too.
Yes.
And finally, we've got a sharp-shinned hawk.
Yes. And another young one. I think I get lots of pictures of young birds because they are naive and don't know enough to fly away. And I had been looking for birds in the bushes, and apparently the sharp-shinned hawk also had been looking for birds in the bushes and dove into this thicket.
Because that's what they do there.
That's what they do. They catch little birds. And cycle of life and all that.
I've watched them hunt in my backyard, and the aerodynamics are just extraordinary.
Right,
The way they can turn in tight spaces to get what they're after. Of course, I'm a photographer and a birder, and the first thing I learned when I tried to apply my photography to birding is that it's a lot harder than I thought it would be to capture birds. Obviously, it takes good lenses. And it takes a lot of preparation and patience, I think. So tell them, what have you learned as you've tried to become as much of a bird photographer as a birder?
You really do need a good lens. I kept trying to get by with a sort of a sophisticated shooting point, and that just didn't work. And so finally worked myself up to a 70 by 300 millimeter lens.
An SLR, so you can
single lens
capture
reflex,
pretty quickly what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. And I'd say 95% of my photos are taken at 300 millimeter rather than anything else. All but the one photograph was taken right here on our property, and it's a matter of going out every morning and just browsing around and keeping your eyes open, and things pop up in front of you, and you discard thousands of pictures and end up with some that you just really love. And most of the ones I like show some of the character of the bird, or at least something I can interpret as part of their character. It makes it more interesting than just having a perfect picture.
Well, then the way you were talking about those that you, some of your favorites, kind of highlight that. I remember when we did the Christmas bird count one year, we were not far from here chasing, a ruby-crowned kinglet through a thicket. And I think we got some good looks at the kinglet, but if we were trying to photograph it, it would have been.
Yeah, so summer birds are obviously harder to take pictures of, and the kinglets are terrible because they're just hopping around all the time, so very difficult. I've got a picture of a kinglet with a blur of red. I caught him just as he was taking off, and you can see the blur of red, so you know it's a ruby-crowned kinglet, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, I just admire your patience, and I admire your photographs. You know, it's, I guess I've tried enough to know that, when I see one of a bird that I have stalked, that's good. That had to take some patience. I guess the last thing I wanted to talk to you about, because it's certainly one of the things I'm trying to capture with rhubarb skies generally, is this whole connection between our spiritual attraction to nature and our activism. You know, your career speaks to something of that. I mean, was birding your gateway drug to going on to doing the public policy work and the activism that you did?
It was. It was. I've been a member of the Audubon Society, which is working towards saving habitat and educating people about birds I joined them in 1970, so it's been 45 years just with Audubon Society. And so trying to educate people, making them more aware through presentations, and then helping doing bird surveys so that we can keep track of what's going on. Audubon has looked at bird data that citizen scientists have accumulated over a century now, and they're using that to determine and try to predict climate change and what's going to change. Some of the habitat that birds currently use are going to become too warm. The insects and other things that they need aren't going to be there. And where are they going to go? And there's only so far they can move. And maybe the other things they need aren't going to be in this new range that they're going to be pushed into. So,
just remembering some of the photos and stories you have from actually getting out there with gnats and actually doing the science.
I mean, right, right. Just, bird banding.
And, that kind of thing. And your work on the environment, what are some of the things that you've been involved in that you feel best about?
Well, I worked real hard on the Planning Commission trying to determine the best way of growth for Spokane County while protecting the environment. And it was very frustrating. We had a wide range of people on the committee, and basically all of our recommendations to the county commissioners were unanimous, and so many times those decisions were overturned because development had more power than
more heft.
The regulations, despite the so it was nice to be involved with the Neighborhood Alliance and the Center for Justice, who helped us appeal some of those decisions. And while we won the appeals, the projects typically were vested while it was being appealed, so they went forward anyway.
No, it was frustrating.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last thing I want to say is thank you. Thank you for being my mentor when it comes to birding, and thank you for all your work and for what it means, not just for me, but my children who are beginning to inherit this part of the earth and certainly benefit from it. So
wonderful children.
And thanks for the afternoon. This is so lovely to come out and visit with you. Well, hope to do it again. Do it again when it greens up.
Right.
As spring takes in.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Linda.
Mm-hmm.